Good evening, I'm Lina Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. President Barack Obama has asked the U.S. Congress for nearly $2 billion in emergency fund to fight Zika in the United States and other countries. U.S. health officials say the funding is critical for research and development, including analyzing suspected links between Zika and microcephaly, a condition in newborns that results in deformed skulls and underdeveloped brains. Zika is contracted through bites of the Aedes mosquito and has been spreading rapidly in South and Central America and the Caribbean. The virus has been linked to the severe birth defect in Brazil. Researchers have found some preliminary evidence it may be transmitted through sexual contact. Public health officials' concern is focused on pregnant women and women who may become pregnant. On today's Health Chat, we continue to look at the Zika virus. And joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Dr. Oluwatosin Omole, a public health physician and advocate with interest in primary care, global health policy, and global health governance. Dr. Omole, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be joining you this afternoon.
It's great to have you. Let me remind our listeners, if you'd like to participate in the show with your question or comment, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can ask your international operator to reverse the charge. You can also email us your thoughts, as always, at healthchat@voanews.com. We will start our discussion shortly, but first, Voice of America's reporter Joy DiCapua has this report. Among the following development with the Zika virus is Mitchell Warren, head of the HIV/AIDS advocacy group AVAC. It advocates for greater scientific research for a vaccine as well as treatment and prevention for Zika. Warren spoke to VOA's Jody Kabwa, the current Zika outbreak and how it compares to the recent Ebola outbreak and the decades-long HIV epidemic. Take a listen.
The easy comparison, certainly right now, is the Zika outbreak and the Ebola outbreak from a little over a year ago, similar in many respects because they were true kind of outbreaks, seemingly catching the world off guard. HIV certainly did that 35 years ago, and it was kind of a rapidly mounting epidemic in a couple of specific populations. And this is different. I mean, this is more like Ebola in that anyone who's in these places geographically is at risk, and in this case passed by a mosquito. Clearly, the world has learned a great deal from Ebola and from HIV. So there is a rapid response from the World Health Organization. There is a particularly rapid response to the importance of doing research to try to address the epidemic rapidly. And you're already seeing a lot of people talking about the importance of developing a Zika vaccine. So I think the rush to research is very clear. We aren't seeing the same kind of stigma that emerged with Ebola a couple of years ago in West Africa, and it's clearly been the dominant issue with respect to HIV for our entire 35-year history.
Well, you're not seeing the stigma or discrimination. What about the level of fear among people in the area?
I was talking to a Brazilian colleague just the other day. Of course, as they begin Mardi Gras and Carnival and all the celebrations, and people seem to be plowing ahead in the face of this. That said, this has clearly caused a lot of people to raise some quite remarkable responses. I think most importantly and most interestingly is the call in a number of countries for women to delay pregnancy by months to get through the season of high contact, and in a couple of cases, even delay pregnancies by a couple of years. That is quite remarkable. It is quite hard to believe in terms of how one would implement something like that. When a government says women shouldn't get pregnant or pregnant women shouldn't travel, of course it's going to create lots of alarm and concern, and justifiably so. So I think we are really at that moment of trying to ensure that the public health response is appropriate and that the recommendations are feasible and practical.
So tell me what you think will happen regarding research for a Zika vaccine.
We need a vaccine. That's, you know, public health 101. The good news is this is a virus that seems to be one that is easier to develop a vaccine for than something like HIV. And the reason for that is the best case scenario with the virus is that once infected, if you clear it, then you become immune. And that's true of a number of diseases. Unfortunately, that is not the case with HIV, which is why the development of an HIV vaccine is so very difficult. But with Zika virus, it seems that people who are infected once are then immune and are protected naturally. So we need to create a vaccine that simply replicates nature. Whereas with HIV, we have to create a vaccine that does better than nature. I mean, that's why we still don't have an AIDS vaccine. What's interesting is a number of research groups and even some companies are really immediately gravitating to the importance of this. There are some leading vaccinologists who see this as a quite straightforward development path, much different than HIV, and that a vaccine could be developed in a number of years. And this is a particular kind of virus called a flavivirus. So there are other diseases that are similarly flaviviruses for which there are vaccines that have been developed. So there is great hope that one could develop it. But that doesn't mean it's around the corner, but certainly the probability of success and speed to success seem to be faster than something like HIV.
Dr. Omole, you heard this interview. Can I have your reaction on what Mitchell Warren was saying, looking at in terms of what the priorities are or should be when you look at the Zika virus outbreak that is ongoing now, and what we learn, lessons we may have learned from the Ebola outbreak that we just came out of?
Thank you very much for that question. I think it's very important, you know, as the previous speaker said, to develop a vaccine. But I think that's going to be a secondary concern. In the primarily, I think the broader questions that we should be asking are, what is the global strategy for response? How can we develop treatments? How can we develop data and study the disease? And what are the international coordination efforts to investigate and understand the relationship between, you know, Zika and microcephaly and other things that have been related to Zika virus? Now, to fight the Zika epidemic, I think there are a number of lessons we can learn from, like, from the Ebola virus that, you know, was in Africa for between 2014 and 2015. I think first and foremost, the most important thing is to be able to get a test that, you know, that it's a point of the rapid diagnostic test. I think this is one of the major failures during the Ebola epidemic. There was an inability to quickly validate and deploy rapid diagnostic tests. And this could have been used by non-health workers to diagnose Ebola. I think in the Zika with this Zika virus, what needs to be done is that rapid diagnosis test kits need to be distributed to community health workers, to people on the field, to be able to better quickly diagnose Zika virus. Currently, all the diagnosis for Zika that has been made in the countries that have Zika virus have to be done in research laboratories, and sometimes these laboratories are far from the places where the outbreak is. These laboratories are also very expensive. I think developing a test for Zika is an immediate priority, and it should be coordinated and with a lot of finance and fast-track validation process to ensure that this rapid diagnostic test kits get into the field as soon as possible. Secondly, I think the other important thing about Zika virus is that we need to prevent widespread transmission. One of the major problems that occurred when Ebola occurred was that the transmission was very fast. It was very rapid, and there was a widespread epidemic of multiple outbreaks, and within a few months it became a global crisis that became difficult to control. I think Zika for now, I mean, it's in about 24 to 25 countries, but it's still in South and Central America. It's already getting very fairly widespread. But I think efforts should be spared to pin down the virus in the various countries where it is and to stop it from reaching new geographies. I feel people who are traveling out of some of the countries where Zika virus is present should be tested. You know, during the Ebola virus, there were tests at airports, there were tests at seaports. And as I said before, if we use this rapid diagnosis test kits, it could help in trying to, you know, quickly diagnose and enhance the ability to implement the approach of preventing widespread transmission. Thirdly, I think another important thing that needs to be done is, you know, to control the Zika virus. And one of the most basic and cheapest way of controlling the Zika virus is through the use of mosquito insecticide-treated nets, bed nets, and repellents. I think one of the major public health responses to this in Brazil, Colombia, Venezuela, and all the other countries that have Zika virus is that repellents and bed nets should be distributed to households, should be distributed to communities. I also feel public health measures that focus on cleaning up the environment, removing stagnant water, cutting off bushes, cutting off grasses, and should be implemented. And this would, you know, kill the mosquitoes at source. Additionally, people who have been diagnosed with Zika virus should be kept away from pregnant women and in settings where mosquitoes can't feed on them.
Okay.
Finally.
Okay. I mean, you made so many interesting points there, and you answered several of my questions, actually. let me interrupt you there. I will let you finish because you wanted to make one final point. Please continue, and then we can continue the discussion.
Okay, I think the final point I wanted to make was just the fact that, you know, we can't downplay the role of research and development with immediate action. There are many critical questions, Ebola, that remain unanswered. There are many critical questions about Zika that have remained unanswered. I mean, the most pressing question is there scientific evidence that proves that, you know, Zika virus causes microcephaly? The jury is still out on that. We don't have a specific answer. But I think in the next few weeks, in the next few months, research, you know, will go on and we'll be able to answer some of these questions.
So the question as to if Zika and microcephaly are linked is, as you said, the jury is still out there. You know, there are some people that really believe that, yes, it is true. This is an outbreak that is ongoing. This is a serious situation because people are getting sick and there seem to be a link. But some people feel like it's being over exaggerated in terms of the fatality of Zika and how some of the repercussions that they're saying from the disease, because in the past, from experience that has been reported, Zika causes a mild disease, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
And I think that is true, and that's a genuine concern. I think one of the major reasons why people are reacting like this, you know, we respond with regards to the Zika virus, is that when Ebola initially started in West Africa in 2014, the response was initially very slow. You know, on March 31st, 2014, the MSF declared that, you know, Ebola was an emergency and they were running out of how to control it. But it took about 4.5 months until August 2014 before the World Health Organization, you know, declared it a public health emergency. So I think the experience with Ebola has made a lot of public health professionals very cautious and, you know, on the alert. And, you know, there's always this saying that it's better to err on the side of caution. I mean, as you said, Zika is not as fatal as Ebola, but I think people just want to be very careful and nobody wants to be caught off guard. That being said, you know, microcephaly, as you said, is one of the conditions that has been linked with Zika. But again, there is still no strong scientific evidence. In a lot of the countries where, you know, there has been suspicion of this, there's just been a lot of concern on women who became pregnant around the time when the Zika virus started. The question that a lot of researchers are asking is, there are so many other things that cause microcephaly. Microcephaly can be caused by cytomegalovirus. It can be caused by the rubella virus. It can be caused by toxoplasmosis. It can be caused by syphilis. It can also be caused by herpes. And so, you know, it's in the past, it used to be, I mean, before the advent of this Zika virus, it was an isolated, it was an isolated condition. It could occur with major birth defects and with other birth defects. So for now, I think the jury is still out on there. We still need to carry out more research to actually find out if Zika can actually cause microcephaly.
Okay. And Dr. Omole, we will continue our discussion. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue to discuss Zika virus with Dr. Oluwatosin Omole. Don't go away.
The consultation among doctors in Brazil and the United States have increased in the last 2 weeks over the birth defect microcephaly that has sparked alarm in the current Zika virus outbreak. Some of the leading authorities on the condition are finding patterns of unusual devastation in scan of the newborn's malformed brains. The early observation of this doctor point to a tough road ahead for the babies. The Zika virus is transmitted by mosquito, causing mild symptoms in about 20% of cases. But a spike in reported microcephaly cases among babies in area of Brazil with the Zika outbreak has triggered an international effort to determine whether the virus causes the condition. United States President Barack Obama is asking Congress for more than $1.8 billion in emergency funding to help the Zika virus in the United States and other countries. The White House said the funding will support essential strategies to combat the virus, such as rapidly expanding mosquito control programs, accelerating vaccine research and diagnostic development, and providing healthcare services and support for low-income pregnant women. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention has reported 50 laboratory confirmed cases among the U.S. travelers from December 2015 to February 2016. United Nations and human rights organizations are calling for a complete stop to the harmful practice of female genital mutilation, which affects millions of girls and women around the world. The call for a global ban comes as the world commemorates Saturday the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. The recent report by the United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF, find at least 200 million girls and women alive today have undergone female genital mutilation in 30 countries. The study notes half of these so-called cutting have occurred in three countries: Egypt, Ethiopia, and Indonesia.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing Zika virus, continuing to understand this new outbreak has taken the world by surprise, if I may say so. And our guest is Dr. Oluwatosin Omole, a public health physician and advocate with interest in primary care, global health policy, and global health governance. Dr. Omole, we have a question from Samuel. He sent us via email. He is in Ghana, and he wants to know, is it true that Zika virus is sexually transmitted? Can be sexually transmitted? That's his question.
Thank you, Samuel from Ghana, for that question. The answer is yes, but experts suspect that this rarely happens. You know, a lot of the scientists and researchers who have been focused on researching Zika believe that most of the Zika infections have been transmitted by mosquitoes and not transmitted through sexual contact. However, what I could tell you, and this, you know, this is a preliminary report, is that there have been about three cases of, sexual transmission of Zika. In 2008, there was the report of a scientist who was working in Africa, who lives in Colorado, who, you know, infected his wife with Zika before he developed the symptoms himself. The scientist presented with rash, he had fevers, he had headaches, and a year later, tests were conducted on the blood of the scientist and his wife, and it revealed that both of them had Zika virus. That was in 2008. In 2013, there was also the report that in Tahiti, in the Pacific Islands, there was a live virus found in the semen of a 44-year-old man. It's unsure whether he actually infected anyone with the Zika virus. But the most recent one, and the one close to home, is what happened in Dallas last week, where health officials announced that there was a traveler who had recently gone to Venezuela a few weeks before then, and I had come back to the United States, and they had infected his sexual partner with Zika virus. The CDC and the Texas health authorities have not yet released data or information about the man who had the about the transmission that occurred in Dallas. But the CDC recently issued guidelines suggesting that pregnant women should avoid contact with men who have recently returned from areas with Zika transmission. There have also been suggestions that men returning from South America, Central America, should consider using condoms.
Okay. Now we have Chinyere in Nigeria. She says, if Zika was found in Uganda, are there any reported cases of microcephaly in the country linked to Zika? Do you have an answer on this?
No, I'm not aware of any cases of microcephaly in Uganda as of today.
Okay.
Or anywhere in Africa for that matter.
Okay. All right. And Peter in Kenya wants to know, he says, is Zika more dangerous than malaria? There are many people in Africa that suffer from malaria. How dangerous is Zika compared to malaria?
Thank you, Peter, for that question. Well, Zika and malaria are, you know, they're both caused by mosquito-borne blood parasites. But Zika is not as dangerous as malaria, definitely. I can tell you that the fatality case in Zika is really, 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 really low. In fact, only about one in people, in five people, show symptoms such as fever, rash, red eyes, and joint pain. Malaria, as we know, is very, very severe. And, in the past, malaria used to kill about responsible for the death of close to about 1 million people every year. However, due to significant investments in fighting malaria, in, you know, ensuring mosquito-treated nets and giving people insecticides, the mortality rate for malaria has decreased by about 60%. Since the year 2000. So the short answer to your question is no. Zika is not as fatal, is not as dangerous as malaria. Malaria kills very quickly. Malaria kills very fast. So, most times, from what is known, Zika's symptoms are usually not typically severe and they subside after a few days.
So can you tell us a little bit about the symptoms? How different are they from malaria?
Okay. So as I said before, the symptoms of Zika virus are, fever, rash, joint pain, and conjunctivitis. Conjunctivitis basically means somebody who is infected has red eyes. The symptoms begin usually about 2 to 7 days after an individual has been bitten by an infected mosquito. And it's been suggested that to prevent infection with Zika, you need to wear long sleeve shirts, you need to wear long pants, you need to stay in places where windows and door screens can keep mosquitoes outside. There's also been suggestions that we should wear clothing or gear that has been treated with permethrin or buy permethrin-treated items. For people who have Zika, the basic treatment is to treat the symptoms, and essentially that involves getting plenty of rest, drinking fluids, taking medicines such as Tylenol, acetaminophen to reduce the symptoms of the fever and the symptoms of the fever and the pain. Now for malaria. Malaria is also caused by the Anopheles mosquito. The symptoms include fever, include nausea, include vomiting. Sometimes the patient might present with abdominal pain. And but the most important symptom of the malaria is the very high fever.
Okay. Now, when we look at the Ebola outbreak that the whole world was involved, so to speak, was concerned with, and it really affected Africa. Now, we're going through the Zika virus. There seems to be, I won't say a pattern, but it seems like we have to be prepared for emergency, and that's a reality. We always talk about countries being prepared. Preparedness is key. Infrastructure, health infrastructure is key. Can you talk about how African countries can map out strategies for better response and control of future epidemics and long-term preparedness?
Thank you. And that's a very important and very critical question. And I think this is the question that African countries need to address, you know, today, not even tomorrow. You know, as of today, Zika virus is in Central America, is in South America. But we know that with globalization, massive globalization going on, urbanization, international travel, it only needs someone to travel from Brazil to, you know, Kenya, Nigeria, for these diseases to, you know, spread and, you know, it becomes a very big issue there. The big challenge, you know, in terms of all these emerging threats and emerging epidemics is that Brazil, South America, and these other countries have public health systems that are fairly more developed than what we have in Africa. And so the quick question is, what are we going to do, you know, to better respond and to control these epidemics? You know, Ebola destroyed, not destroyed now, but Ebola devastated, you know, Guinea, it devastated Sierra Leone, it devastated Liberia. I think one of the most important things that African countries need to do is to invest in basic health systems. We need to move away from the fire brigade approach, which we currently use, where whenever there is a big public health emergency, we rush, we respond, and then once it's over, we go back to the status quo. I think the most important thing is that we need to invest in building basic public health systems. We need to build networks that connect people in remote areas to the public health network. We also need to invest in building blocks of public health systems. Additionally, African countries need to invest in excellent surveillance mechanisms. One of the major challenges of the current Zika virus and, you know, when we had Ebola was that there was no surveillance. And so nobody knew where there was an idea of where it started from, but nobody could predict the pattern. Nobody could predict where it was going to. Nobody could predict how to respond to it. And, you know, and this also brings us to the point of investing in data. In data mechanisms. Data helps us, you know, make very good decisions. Data helps us plan. Data helps us make projections. African countries need to spend money in trying to get basic public health data in order to respond to public health emergencies. Additionally, African countries need to invest in basic science research. African scientists must evaluate the needs of the African society, and we must become relevant to Africa through adaptation and development of technologies, development of vaccines that are useful to our people and that positively impact the lives of everyday ordinary citizens. I think the other important thing is, the issue of corruption, the issue of, judicious use of aid funds. You know, during the Ebola virus crisis and other crises, there have been issues about, you know, international governments giving money and, the money not being spent well, or, you know, cases and instances of money missing. I think we need to develop mechanisms to be able to, you know, account for money and use the money that is given to African countries to be able to, you know, better fight the diseases for which they were given for.
Okay, and in a short term, we're running out of time, but I wanted you to say quickly, with this Zika outbreak, I know you gave us the big perspective in terms of preparedness, but right now, what should Africans do faced with this Zika outbreak that is ongoing in Latin America and the Americas? What are, if you were to give us 1, 2, 3 quick strategies or...
Okay, so I think number one, I would advise that non-essential travel should be avoided.
Okay.
To Central South America, if you have no strong reason to go there.
Okay.
I think secondly is that African countries should begin to the surveillance system that was used for the Ebola virus Ebola outbreak should also be deployed. You know, it should be put on alert for the Zika virus. The third thing I think African countries need to do is to begin to develop vaccines, work on developing a vaccine that can fight the, Zika virus.
Okay. Dr. Oluwatosin Omole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And that was Dr. Oluwatosin Omole, public health physician and advocate. Thank you for listening to our show today. And until next time, keep in touch. Let's keep the conversation going on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Mugani. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.